RTL Original Podcast.
Welcome back to DNA Luxembourg Crime Podcast. When Neji Bejaoui entered the Spatzennacht creche in Wasserbillig on the 31st of May 2000, taking 43 children and 5 educators hostage, the parents of the affected children were accommodated at a nearby cultural center. Alongside the parents and close family members, first responders, law enforcement officials, psychologists, and other support staff were also present. There was no media inside, apart from one young journalist, Roy Grotz. Roy is now with RTL, but at the time worked for DNR Radio. In this episode, I sit down with him to chat about the events 25 years later. Roy tells us how the kidnapping unfolded and what it was like being in the same space with the parents in such a traumatizing moment, as well as the untold stories from behind the scenes. Roy felt very emotional being at the cultural center, he recalls, actively deciding to take off his journalist hat, so to speak, and not to conduct any interviews with any of the affected family members. Instead, he listened, observed, and spoke very little. Finally, Roy shares his views on the policing tactic that, although controversial, did end the kidnapping successfully. Welcome to another episode of DNA, Luxembourg Crime Podcast. Here's my chat with Roy. Roy, take us back to the day, 31st of May, year 2000. Where were you when you first heard about this developing situation in Wasserbillig?
Long time ago for me. I even wasn't working here at RTL, but from other radio station called DNR, belonging to the Luxemburger Worthaus, Mediahus now, but at the time Luxemburger Wort. Based in Gasprich. And there was a phone call at 5:30 around in the evening. And I was preparing myself for a lobster dinner in the evening with a colleague, office colleague of mine, Corinne Falscheid, who worked also here at RTL. And that was at the Domaine Thermal at the casino in Mondorf-les-Bains. And so we got the call and I took it and there was somebody calling from neighborhoods, Wasserbillig, Creche, Spatzennacht, telling us there's something very strange going on in the Creche. There are a lot of police cars around the house. Maybe they heard also a helicopter, but they wasn't sure. And it could be something very, very strange happening inside. Okay, that was the information. So we called the police. Nobody there, no correct informations. And I told to Corinne, okay, come, let's move to Moselle River. That's where Wasserbillig, the small town, is located, on our way to Mondorf, because we thought, okay, when we are arriving there, we even not knew about maybe kidnapping or a problem with parents who is just shouting around with the educational stuff there. We didn't know. And then we started and got there and we saw all the police cars, policemen. And then, yeah, the whole thing was unfolding, I would say.
When you arrived, could you see parents outside gathering around the building, or it was too soon to realize what was actually happening?
We were really the first journalists to arrive with my private car. We at that time, even now RTL has cars like we see, that's RTL, and journalists. No, we arrived as normal people, journalists. We entered in a kind of park area in front of the crash, and there was a security perimeter that was delimited by the police officers. And then at 6:30, I did the first live coverage. the news journal, the main news journal was at 6:30, and I have, I told the people what I saw. It was not much. I saw a lot of policemen going around and having that security perimeter, and they shouted at us, telling us, you have to go back, please. In my live coverage, maybe we can't find it at the CNR. I think so. But we didn't have any information how many children are held by how many people in the crèche. What is going on here? Big question marks. And nobody from the police wanted to tell us anything. There was no communication officer from the police. So we stood there and I told people on there what I witnessed.
Would you say that this was, a hostage situation in Luxembourg is very rare, luckily, and probably at that time it was very rare as well. Did you have a feeling that everything was very chaotic, or there was a good structure in kind of the first response to the crèche?
No, I would say the police, but they had the information. They had the information that the kidnapper, Niji Bejawi, wanted to get not the ransom, but he wanted to have a revenge for his conditions, what he blamed for the Luxembourgish government. Conditions of taking away his children, problems with his wife, all these problems. That's why he wanted to enter into the crèche and to tell the whole world, here I am, Neji Bejawi, I'm the stronger than any laws and rules, and I have the power to kidnap my own children together with, at the end, 45 was the first number of children, and then he released them in groups, but not all. And that was his aim, and the police knew about it at that time because they stood in contact with him since like 4:30, around 2 hours when we arrived. So they had all these informations that we didn't had, and so no, they were quite well organized, let's say. And then they invited all the parents that were involved and where children have been in the crèche to the Centre Culturel, Society Center in Wasserbillig, the place where I got also afterwards.
How did you end up in the Centre Culturel? Mm-hmm. Was it because you were one of the first journalists there? Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
They wanted to keep all the journalists, because then they arrived, the Luxembourgish journalists, because you have to know the day after was a holiday day here in Luxembourg, Christi Himmelfahrt. Mm. And also that's why the lobster evening.
Yes, very good.
And, that I missed, by the way. I had a friend of mine who works for the CGDIS psychological stuff. These are not paid people, benevolents. And I called him and I said, I'm sure you are in Wasserbillig now, Leo. And he told me, I have no time now. I'm in the Centre Culturel. We just called all the parents to come here to be very close to their children, to the crèche, and to have them together and to give them first-hand information. But now I have no time for you, but come to the centre afterwards. I can give you an interview or something. And that's why I got one of the last persons who were not really officially involved, like the CGDIS people, like all the police officers and psychological staff members who got into the Centre Culturel. At that time it was still allowed, but then the doors closed.
What was the atmosphere like in there?
I wrote some adjectives down. Shocking, horrified, terrified, traumatic atmosphere. People, you have to imagine, like 300 meters away, there are your children. You are the parents. First mothers came, then fathers came. A lot of them were Portuguese or Italian people, and they were very traumatized. That's really the whole night also. In the evening, especially in the evening, because they wonder, where are my children? What is he doing with them? What is happening inside? Is he doing harm to them? Well, and then that was the way the psychological staff wanted to really calm them down, as they did the negotiators with Neji Bejaoui. They wanted to get in contact with him, to keep the contact, to negotiate, like to release nearly all children. They did not achieve to do it, but during all the whole night, he released by groups. The youngest children, let's say. But the atmosphere was really, for me, so strange. And it must be a nightmare for all these parents that were there. They were yelling, also crying, shouting some. And then, doctors were there. They were like assisted, but quite unbelievable. And for me, I was just a witness. I was beside. My microphone, I was hiding it away because I didn't want it to really get involved into all this. And my only chance was I was there. I was quite there. And I said to myself, let's be there. Let's do the observation, and maybe like I'm doing now, or some days afterwards, you can talk about what you witnessed and the methods, how they got in contact with Neji Bejaoui and how they transmitted the informations out of the crash to the parents.
You felt a responsibility to take your live journalist hat off and be more a parent or an adult with children, kind of this, have this perspective on the situation.
Absolutely. I wanted to keep the distance. I had no interview at the end of the night, where I stayed there all the hours. My phone was emptying at that time. Phones were really anything at all. The batteries were so I like in the conclave now. I put it out, like, because I said to myself, otherwise you have no contact anymore with outside. And after 7 o'clock, we had no more on air live feeds from Wasserbillig. So I said to myself, okay, put it off, let's stay here, witness what you see. And and the whole night I witnessed how they informed parents. They wrote the messages that they got from the negotiation team, from the police, to a flip chart. They not hold long speeches or no. They wrote, everything is fine. We are. There is no yelling coming out of the house. It seems that he separated the children and mostly the women that were. Afterwards, we knew that he raped some of that women in during the kidnapping. For me, an information that during the trial, 3 years after, we got informed about this. We could not imagine that this is being happening in parallel to the kidnapping, where you had to nearly hide all the children into the separate different rooms in the crèche. And then he had even to dehumanize the women and to rape them. Unbelievable, really. All these things we did not knew during the night, that were inside informations, but the parents got the main informations, no harm. We are still in contact with him. He's quite calm. Yes, he has a gun and two hand grenades or explosives. But they are still in the entrance area and the kids are separated. And during the night, he got the information. Even now, they seem to sleep, the children. And then that appeased also the parents.
So there was a continuous updating process happening in a very calm, organized manner with this flip chart. I can imagine parents gathering around this flip chart, waiting for the individual to finish the sentence of what is... I recall that there was a direct line of sight between the Centre Culturel and the crèche.
Yeah, it was very important for the parents to see at least the crèche, the house, where Niji Bejaoui kept them. And also the negotiators were in an office, modular office of the police, where the negotiators were talking to Niji Bejaoui, and it was also situated in the yard of the Centre Culturel. And then the CGDs people took small groups of parents to get to the nearest place to see at least the crèche. And then parents stood there, looked at the crèche, 5-10 minutes, and got back to the Centre Culturel. Ministers were arriving, Prime Minister Juncker was arriving, the Minister for Internal Affairs arrived, the Portuguese ambassador arrived from Brussels. All these people arrived during night. And then around 3 o'clock, the special units, special forces from the German police arrived, the SEK. And I heard them saying, "Where's the bastard? We will kill him now." That was the words of the German policeman. Okay, they did not did anything, because in charge were Luxembourgish policemen. But they were there because, as you said before, Josh, in Germany, they maybe this type of kidnapping is more common than here in small Luxembourg.
Different approach to solving the problem. I want to just quickly talk about Bejaoui. So he seems to have acted as a reaction to his own family drama, divorce, loss of custody over his children, financial difficulties. What did we gradually learn about him? I mean, they must have felt this from him during the negotiation process. And did that maybe also change their, did they become more emotional with him? Did they?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was not in the car where, right. where they had the real negotiations and discussions with him. What he wanted surely to have is attention, also attention by the press. And so we are sitting here in an RTL studio, and he called also to RTL.
It would
be maybe interesting to recall to the people who listen to us, or maybe to recall that voice record, because
right.
it must exist. And then he was very excited, talked about what you said, all his familiar private problems, why he was in that situation, why he wants back his children to escape to his home.
Je titule les otages et arrivederci. Je suis prêt à me suicider. J'ai une preuve. Je suis allé pour me suicider quand on a pris mes enfants en 1994. Demandez ma femme, demandez le psychiatre si vous ne me croyez pas. Je suis prêt à me suicider maintenant. Vous croyez, je supporte bien la vie. Ou le départ vers la Libye ou le départ vers la mort. Rien d'autre.
Yeah, he was at the beginning very excited. Yeah, but not so excited that he could rape the people and keep in distance the children. And has at all time he had the gun with him, and he they saw him moving into the house. He was moving the whole time, because he must have read a lot about kidnapping and the methods of a kidnapper who wants to get out afterwards and with his demands resolved. And so, but he was a fragile person. He and with the hours you saw, he got tired, he got more nervous. Don't joke with me, don't make any fun of me, I know you all bloody people. I want that big car, I want to have a plane on the airport, I go out with my children. And the negotiators wanted to release all the kids, and then that they get rid of him, or that they could arrest him.
So his demands were that he wanted a private plane to take him to Libya, as well as 6 million francs, calculated, that's a million euros, but much higher in value these days, of course, than that. The police agreed to his demands, or pretended to agree, right, to those demands, to have him, to allow
to
him
calm
to leave,
him down. Yeah,
to
sure.
calm him down and for him to leave the country. Then came the time that he said, but I also want a press moment. I want to be able to share my story on camera.
That's it, because that that interview, oh, it was not an interview, what he said here on RTL radio at the phone, It was recorded, yes, but after discussions between police and RTL journalists, we decided to not bring it on air. And afterwards, yeah, he had radio, so he knew that nothing.
He was waiting
nothing
for it.
Yeah. And then he said, yeah, now I want a real interview with a camera. Then that was the chance for the police. Then they had, okay, a car and a plane. Mm-hmm. You can fake all the things, that's for sure. And the interview, this could be the moment where we can act at least, because they could never act because there were always the women in the house, the educatrice and the children. So they could not enter into the house. And he said, I have explosives in the room. Mm.
Which they could not check, not verify. The risk was very high with kids around. Yeah. Tell us about the plan that the police had to use this interview as a moment to maybe end the hostage situation. Yeah.
I must say, at that real evening or in the morning after, we knew nothing about it. So that was good. And I left also the Centre Culturel in the morning hours because, my phone was completely empty and there were camera teams from all the world, even CNN, BBC, they came down from Brussels, German, French, live coverage the whole day on that holiday day. I don't know how many cars were there in front of, and CGD's cars, 30, 40, because they wanted to have one CGD's ambulance for one kid. So that was the method. Then I left it and I went sleeping nearby some hours. And then I came back at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on the other day. Mm. And it was still unfolding and we were preparing for a second night because it's going on and they want us that he's getting really, really tired and then maybe they have the intention to enter the house. The idea was then, and this was a former strategical plan, also a German method, as it seems, used during a bank robbery, where also the criminal wanted kind of interview. And they had the idea to fake a camera and to have an interview with him and to shoot him at least, but maybe not deathly, lethally, but to have the possibility to arrest him. Mm-hmm. And they had long negotiations with RTL to get a car from RTL, to have a journalist in the car driven by a policeman. As journalists.
In civilian clothing. Yeah.
And to get to the house, to have the camera there, standing him in front and talking to him. Mm-hmm. But there were some problems.
Béjaoui leaves the building, finally, with a child in his arm.
At 6 o'clock in the evening.
And a grenade in his other hand.
Absolutely, that he hit on his back. That's a bit of a myth. some say the gun, he was shot by the gun inside, it's a bit like JFK, the gun inside the camera, but there were also snipers. And it's not so clear if a sniper shot and hit him, or was it the gun inside of the camera, that it seems to be not so precise shooting. The problem was he fell backwards. They did not knew if he left the small...
Right, the pin in the grenade.
That's it. And he still was holding the kid. And then the déminage came and jumped on him. He was on his back and it was still that moment of, is now something exploding or not? Nothing exploded because it was an old hand grenade.
They took the child...
Immediately off.
And jumped on him. So tell us a little bit about the camera because it's fascinating, scary and fascinating at the same time. There was an RTL camera, what seemed like a television camera, operated, as we talked a little bit already off air, by an RTL cameraman as well. This was a fake camera and there was actually a device inside. There was a gun built into this. So it was maybe provided by the police, this whole...
German, as I knew of afterwards.
Piece of technology.
That's it.
And it, during the interview, it may have, or it would have been a sniper, struck Bejaoui.
Absolutely.
What?
Quite incredible for us too. All these informations, we got them hours and hours afterwards because at 6:30, so helicopters were landing. They took him immediately away. All the children and the women were released. And then the Wasserbillige affair was like a bit of history. And then, let's make place for the trial for Neji Bejaoui.
Tell us something about the trial. Did more information come out that was previously known?
All the rape cases. The women were victims were really angry also with the press. Why? Maybe because during all the time since the kidnapping and the trial, nobody really talked about their traumatism or the children's traumatism, the parents. I even now, 25 years afterwards, I don't know if the Spatzenacht still exists.
Okay.
It has to live with the history.
Right.
The structure there, the crash. But all the victims, what they were going through, must be transformed their whole life. And it came out during the trial. It was very, very emotionally loaded. Must be also like a nightmare for all the involved people. And to see back Neji Bejaoui, a lot more kilos than at the time. Then he was good trained for this, and it seems he trained specially for his kidnapping, it seemed. And then, he got 15 or 20 kilos more. I even didn't recognize him in the courtroom. So, A broken man. Yeah.
There was a lot of... Just to quickly come back to the technique that was used to take him down. From a journalistic standpoint, from an ethics point of view, how did it feel to have actual journalists also involved in this? Can we call it a technique?
Yeah, it's a technique. It's to...
Loss to of finish, trust to finish. After yeah, and sure. Everything and all the emotions and everything involved with that. How did that affect... journalists in Luxembourg?
Then broke out a discussion about how could they use RTL material to shoot somebody, to hurt somebody. The other said, when you want an interview, you cannot stand there and say we can do nothing, anything. So we have to act, and we have to act by all methods. And it's like afterwards... accuse people or victims of the Stockholm syndrome. Why are they getting in, solidarized with their raptor? That's human, I would say. And here, naturally, the discussions broke out about neutral media and how can you get involved in an affair like this. But at the end, I would say it was... the right methods to really end that nightmare of a long, long day and night.
And all children were released safely.
Yeah, as I said, during the whole time by groups, at the end maybe around 15, 20 kids were still in the house and four or five women.
I'm surprised the Spatzenacht still exists.
Even they kept the name.
Wow.
I would say.
The same building, presumably?
Same building, yes.
Fascinating. How did the community deal with it? Was it a heavy tarnished chapter that was hanging above the village, above the town.
Yeah, sure, the name Spatzenarscht, Wasserbillig, was during years and years. Even they had gatherings, reunions with the small village people. Victim groups were created. But it was not so in the media. They wanted to keep it at a lower level, let's say, and to assist the people in the right medical way also. But it affected surely the image of Wasserbillig for all the years and now when we are talking.
And then come we, 25 years since.
For sure.
We are contributing to the...
Revive some strong feelings, yeah.
Thank you very much, Roy, for sharing your very personal insight into such a drama in Wasserbillig. Thank you so much.
Thanks.